going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
My dad's not here right now. He's still at work. So I'm going to bless him.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I'm going to see if there's a clean version so then my parents and the people at my school will not get mad at me. We've got the spritzer filled with water just in case if stuff gets too fire. I'm going to set up the speaker and I'm going to listen to
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
I think this is the best
Mike Shope
feature that I've heard in a long time. I think his flow is really good on it, and I like his aggressiveness on it. And
the Bulldog
put not enough effort in it. I think overall his flow was good, but I don't like that mumble rapping. That was my review of
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Didn't need the spritzer. Wasn't fire enough. No spritzer for you. No spritzer.
All right, we're back. Day two of the draft tonight. The Bills, as you surely know by now, select Max Hairston from Kentucky, cornerback, and having doing that, I mean, I guess you could say for them, it was not an eventful night. They sat still. Not a lot really was going on, period. But you had a couple trades there, 6-7 picks ahead of the Bills, but yeah. Otherwise there was just the Hunter trade, which was spectacular at the beginning. The Bills do the thing. They needed a cornerback. Now we know, needless to say, how they ranked Hairston versus Amos, others who right. were not picked.
Right. Yeah. So, sensible pick. And now we'll just wait and see what happens. My favorite thing about it is that I feel like I talked more about Amos late yesterday. I compiled a list, I think, during the break at 6:30. Mm-hmm. Trade up candidates. I had a handful of names, and then stay put candidates. And Amos and Hairston were the first two names there. And I thought about Amos largely because of he was a little taller, and there were comparisons to Tre'Davious White, and I'd seen him mocked to them often. I didn't really think about, and Hairston largely, if I saw him in mock drafts, was, unlike Amos, picked usually earlier. So I thought there'd be more likelihood of Amos being there. But anyway, I really like the speed factor. Like, I feel like the Bills have sort of taken, it feels like a little bit of a departure for them, because I don't know that this guy checks every box necessarily. Like, the tackling seems like it's a concern. I think it's a legitimate concern. He's a little light and is bounced off. I'm watching reels of highlights of him making some tackles and missing some tackles. I mean, I guess, a lot of guys are going to miss their share of tackles. They're going to be 100% on that. But I like that they prioritized getting someone fast. Because even though it's not on offense, I think overall this team has not been, for all their success, ever really a fast team on either side of the ball. So I like that they, I think it feels to me like they prioritize that with this pick over someone 3 inches bigger and a little heavier and maybe with a reputation for being a more sure tackler like Amos.
It gives us a chance to sit with a word that is fun to say all off season. Twitchy.
Yeah.
He's twitchy.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure is a word I ever have heard in any other context. But football players can be twitchy. So we got it. We got one of them. I think, you know, there was no trade. I wonder how close they even came. They might have, for a minute, been offered a trade down. But you had the Giants. The Giants acted quickly. They went to 25.
Right.
So that didn't drag on to the point where the Bills were a player for that. And then you had Kansas City and Philadelphia flip past the Bills. But I don't know. I don't know how close they came, whether there was anything they would have considered at 30. If there were, I mean, I'm going to say this, right? If there were, I'd probably do it. But, A, I don't know how much of a gap they would have had between Hairston and these other guys. There's no B in this case. It's just that you would have had Revell, too, in the early second round. You would have probably had a choice, depending on where the trade landed you, of one of these corners. There was no reason to ever consider trading up for one. And Grant and Nolan went so early.
So that was over.
Right? Even Sal's guy, Williams.
Yes, right.
They all went so early that there was not that either. They might have had designs on a move up for a corner, a move up for a defensive tackle, a move down with the Giants or something, and just maybe none of it really came close to happening.
It feels like that might have just gotten taken away from them if they were inclined to want to do it at all. And, yeah, I think I said a few times yesterday, talking to Sal and just you know, amongst ourselves here, that seemed to me very possible. And I'd stop short of saying it was likely. I mean, it happened already. But the guys that have the, you know, more than one club in the bag, so to speak, you know, big, you know, defensive tackles that can get up the field, I felt like the Eagles' performance in the Super Bowl, how they shut down Mahomes, was going to result in guys who can do that going sooner rather than later. And so, in Grant in particular, you've got someone who they might be betting on him being able to do both. Because he's got the big body, but he's got really light feet and seems like there's maybe the potential for him to round into someone who can be that. And I thought teams would prioritize that. So, yeah, the Bills are sort of left with, as far as defensive tackle goes, you know, it's really just, I mean, there are still quick guys left, but they're not big. And so, really, you're left with 340-pound space eater guys. And you should be able to get a guy, if that is still something they consider to be a need. It is not likely to be an upfield presence of any kind, really, but that is still someone as a rotational piece that could help them. And something I think we agreed on I did not want them to spend a first-round asset on someone who wasn't more than just that. Because it feels to me like Saturday even is full of guys that fit that profile. If you're looking for someone to play 40%, 30% of the snaps in, you know, in Daquan Jones's place, you can find that somewhere later on. You don't have to pay a premium for it. The premium is what, you know, can I get a guy that can do both? And those guys, like we just said, I mean, Grant, I was stunned how early he went off the board. The guy thought he was maybe a guy that could get to, you know, the region of the draft that we talked about yesterday as not, you know, unattainably like gettable trade spots. You know, Minnesota 24, Pittsburgh 21. Maybe you can swing that if he gets there. But, I mean, he was, what pick was he?
13.
13.
Miami.
I mean, holy cow. Right. So you didn't really have a look at that at all.
Right. That's left unanswered, I think, just how maybe it was answered and I missed it. How close they might have been, you know, everything we talked about, comparing those two position groups, you know, having names for each. And as last night plays out, it's the corners that fell. That's not even really falling. It's just that we're there. Johnson, it was considered a fall.
Yeah, I mean, he's all the way out of the first round.
Emin Wari wasn't drafted.
Right.
This, I think, is just a function of this particular draft and how interchangeable, if you will, picks seemed between like 10 and then the fringe of the first round into the second round. There are, I mean, I'm not even the most knowledgeable about it, but there are at least 10 names on the board right now that we talked about,
yeah,
you know, at different times.
And,
and not just the running backs. I'm not even including running backs.
We thought that would happen, right? I mean, that there would be guys that got picked yesterday. There were a couple. The lineman from North Dakota, I don't think it was not a name that I ever really said myself. I'm sure I saw it in mock drafts somewhere. But
that'd be Gray Zabel?
Yeah. That's just not a name that I never said anyway in the run-up to this. And, you know, we do say a lot of names.
But he wasn't considered a reach either.
Right, right.
He just wasn't. He's an offensive lineman, and
right,
the Bills
were
not
going to pick one. We didn't spend any time thinking about that, right. But that there would be names. You know, there were going to be guys left over here. And that, yeah, there are some notable ones. I mean, a lot of the time, it depends on who you talk to, but most of the time because I was crushing on Emin Worry for months here on end, whenever he would come up, be like, yeah, you're probably not even going to really have a look at him. You know, even a trade up idea, he might be too far, like kind of where Grant went, like, you know, in the teens before the 20s, even a lot of the time that was how he was talked about. And he's tumbled all the way out. And maybe teams don't trust that he can play a position. You know, I mean, Louis Cine comes to mind. He was here with the Bills last year and working as a linebacker after being drafted in the first round out of Georgia as this sort of freaky athlete safety guy, and he's never really found a home in the league.
Nope.
And I wonder if teams were scared off by even that comparison. But there was plenty of people who thought he would. You know, I heard Greg Cosell again today on my way in on his usual Friday 2 o'clock spot with Steve and Chris on One Bills Live. So like, I still think he was the best safety in the draft. Can do everything you want to do. So, you know, differing opinions, but obviously the league saw something. I did read on him, and I'll close up shop on him for now at least, because he is still out there. Maybe the Bills could land him tonight. Who knows how far he'll fall. That his grades at PFF against all the good teams in the SEC were pretty bad. Like he got fat playing against, you know, the weaker links in the SEC. And maybe that's something that scared, you know, how's he playing against Alabama, right? How's he look against, you know, the powerhouse teams? And if it goes badly, that, you know, that's not a good sign for the NFL.
Well, I have to decide whether I want to care about on-field performance. I've got a guy who can lift and run really fast. It's a lot of names, but for the most part, this doesn't really mean anything. This is just like based on our conversations and my reflections on the last few months talking about the draft all the time. It's not so many names that when you get to 56, the Bills' first pick tonight, as it stands now, that any of those guys are still there probably. Who are they? Emin Worry, my guy Luther Burden,
mm-hmm,
maybe, but maybe not. Mike Green, we had a caller earlier this week, maybe even yesterday, about trading up for Mike Green, and he had a mock draft, and I looked at one where he went 15th, did not get picked. You're not in play for a corner now, probably, having drafted one, but there's Johnson, there's Amos, there's Revell. I heard the name Nick Skirton enough times,
yep,
an edge rusher. Ezeraku was
right.
One. He was mocked to the Bills numerous times.
Yep.
He wasn't drafted. Of course, all the Sanders, I mean, the quarterbacks, Sanders and Milroe, maybe they both go before the Bills pick, but they're not a candidate for them. And running backs and other receivers, you got a pile of them. Ends up just two running backs last night. I say just because there was just lots of talk about maybe Travion Henderson or someone else. I mean, two in the modern age here, two running backs in the first round is not a small number, but that's what we got. So Henderson lasted. Judkins from Ohio State, and you've got that as well. There's a linebacker named Schwesinger from UCLA that we talked about for a minute. You know, probably, because it's like this, somebody from that list is on the board for the Bills at 56. But if you wanted to, you know, talk about moving up, trying to do that, you can, because I think a lot of teams right now would feel like a player or two or five that they loved are available.
Yeah. And the Bills do have, I mean, I'm not eager for them to part with one of the, you know, they have an extra second. So the flexibility to move if they really wanted to, I think is there for them. You know, I don't know how they go about getting back into the third round without sacrificing a bunch of, like, you would just have a large gap in the draft if you packaged up enough stuff, if somebody would even be interested in taking all of that to get back in the third. But the extra second, you know, if they're crushing on one of these big guys or an edge guy or something that they see great value in, when it gets to, say, I mean, I don't know, it could start right away here, but in the 40s somewhere, maybe, I don't know how modest a move up would cost, you know, a 6 spots. It's not really that modest, I guess, when you get right down to it. Maybe that's in play tonight. But, yeah, I think if they sit where they are, I feel like, I mean, again, corner, you just said it, corner is not something I'm going to be that interested in tonight, so I'm not really worried about how quickly they come off the board. I guess I might want to hope that they do go, because that will maybe push edge guys or receivers or safeties or whatever down to where the Bills are at 56. But it feels to me like if you've got edge guys that were fringe first rounders, boy, the chances of them making it through 24 picks or whatever you got to sift through to get to the Bills today, That feels like a long shot sitting here. I wonder how the Bills feel about it. I wonder how Brandon Bean feels about it. Like, I wonder if the wheels are turning over there about trying to find their way to, like, an Isaraku or somebody. Because I would right now want to bet against that guy in particular. Like, someone who is thought to be maybe a first-round edge player making it to 56 doesn't seem
realistic to me. I agree, and I could totally see the Bills wanting to get up for them. And I would include Green, I think, in the same context.
Sure.
You know, I could totally see them wanting to do that. Not having a third could make that challenging, because that's such a, for flexibility's sake, as I've said a lot, I think important to have, and they don't have their third round pick. Just the 2 seconds as of now for tonight, 56 and 62. Did you know who the Bills had picked before you watched Goodell announce it?
I did not. I went dark on that front, because I was seeing a lot of the picks most of the night. There was one account, I think it was a Fox reporter, that had picks, it seemed, really early. Like, as soon as the pick was on the TV and they're in commercial, or, you know, I don't know, Goodell's riding around on a bicycle or whatever, you know, whatever all the other stuff that they were doing there was to entertain the apparently 200,000 people that stood up there to watch that? Okay.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning, because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I'm not sneezing at it. The Bills want to host this thing. I don't know. Pull in 200,000 people. It's amazing to me to stand out there and watch that event. But, I kind of didn't want to find out on Twitter, I guess, is the only way I can say it. I just thought, yeah, you know, I've made it this far. I'm awake. I'm just going to close up everything else and just watch the TV and wait for them to announce the pick. So that's how I found out.
I had a friend who was there with her husband, and they went in the stadium. You could go in the stadium, too, yep, and then back out. So I guess it's raining there today. She said she's not going to go tonight, but maybe tomorrow. So looked pretty great. I was on the ship-chasing stream, brought on to talk about the Bills and, you know, celebrate the draft, I guess. And so they come on the clock. I'm looking at Twitter because I wanted to know before they did. You know, like, I'm there to analyze a pick, and I didn't want them to tell me who was going to be. This sort of a running thing I have with them.
I get that.
Where my Wi-Fi is slow, and I'm on with them during Bills games, like night games, and they'll know what happened. That game in Miami last year, I did this, and I was like 5 plays behind. It was just the worst. So I wanted to, you know, not be late. And the first thing I saw, I had 6S for 6 seconds from when I had refreshed, was Ray Davis last night.
Oh, okay.
Do you see what he did? So Ray Davis's tweet, this is like whether the pick was in or not. Nobody had it yet publicly. But he tweeted a string of eyeballs.
Okay.
And I went on the stream. I went, uh-oh, because, you know, I'm having fun. I was having fun with the running back idea. Mm-hmm. Right. So then we had a fun conversation about, well, would Ray Davis know the pick before Adam Schefter or whoever? Like, would he be in the, you know, in the inner circle of this?
Well, maybe not if it's another running back, but if it's a player from his school, right?
Well, that is what came to fruition, I think. Yeah. Is I wish I'd thought of that. Because, you know, after it went, one of my guys, Jacob, said, do we really think Ray Davis would be in on the conversations before, like, you know, no, probably. And if it were a running back pick, would that be Davis's reaction immediately, like just basically calling out the team or anything like that? You've already got Cook in his situation, so probably not. But that's what my reaction to it was, like, oh, wow. Is this going to be Travion Henderson? Is this really happening right? Cook is traded or something. Like, what does Davis know? What he would have known from the player, probably, that a Kentucky teammate of his was being drafted by the Bills. So that was exciting for a minute. Most of the night for me was watching that stream with NFL Network on, kind of going back and forth by volume. It's very tough. I said this yesterday. We know this. It's tough to enjoy it like you want to be able to with Twitter, because Twitter is going to be there first and somebody is going to say the pick. Like Schefter and the like, they don't do it. They used to.
Right.
And then that we put a stop to that. So that doesn't happen. But Kostos, right? Yesterday, we had him on, Nick Kostos, on Wednesday. And I commented how this is funny to me that this happens with him and me. His favorite draft bet was Loveland to be tight end one. And I've said many times that was mine, like 5-1 odds. And it was lower than that by Wednesday. But that was my – I didn't bet it. I didn't go – even if I'd gone to Pennsylvania, I would have been disappointed.
Wouldn't have been able to do it there.
You can't bet it there either.
You keep going to West Virginia, and that's now you're on vacation.
Classic bet. My betting life is having it but winning nothing. So he and Benjamin Solak, too, had Loveland, you know, tight end one tweets – way before that was announced, like several minutes before that was announced. And I never saw it. I went looking. I even tweeted on Nick's tweet. I went looking for, like, who said it so that they know, and couldn't find anything. Mm-hmm. It's just tough to enjoy that aspect of the draft, which you really want to. I mean, that's really a fun way to enjoy the draft.
Yeah.
But you kind of always know, not always by a long time, but Goodell is spoiled. Basically, in the end, by Twitter. Nevertheless, it's a fun night.
Yeah.
There have been more fun draft nights.
Yeah.
The Hunter trade is spectacular.
That was incredible.
That was incredible.
I recognize that, you know, I think both things are true. I think Cleveland did a great job getting the haul they got. You know, we'll see about the player they picked. And I would understand a Cleveland fan being, you know, it's not a guard, right? I mean, a defensive tackle that penetrates, like that's picked fifth, that, you know, has some playmaking ability is not the, you know, least sexy defensive pick or pick you can make. But you went from taking this one-of-a-kind unicorn dude to trading out of there to taking a lineman. There's a bit of a thud there. But for Jacksonville, I've been mostly sort of skeptical about them and their new coach. But, man, that dude on the field with Brian Thomas Jr. and that guy drawing up plays, I tweeted last night, like, I might be ready to take them seriously. Like that offense. I mean, I know they're gonna have to figure out other stuff too. But man, that's a hell of a start with those two dudes running routes.
It's a great move. It's what makes one thing that makes the draft so great is we will have that to look back on forever. Like what happens with Travis Hunter and Mason Graham?
Yep.
And whatever Cleveland has an early pick tonight from this trade, the first next year. I mean, that's so much fun. Is to look back on these big draft trades and analyze them. And some of them are legendary, you know, just good and bad. Good in one direction and bad in the other. Often that's what happens. We talked about Watkins yesterday. We will talk about Watkins every year because of the magnitude of that and just how it can either make your franchise or wreck it. And, you know, often it's in between, but that's a brave move by the Browns. That is a brave move because Hunter is so, so cool. All right, next, Sam Panayotovich from Bet Sweats. We'll get his take on round one. Mix in a little playoff talk too, NHL, NBA. Sal Capaccio joins us at 4, and then again right before we turn over coverage for round two, he'll join us. The plan is around 6:30. We might have Max Hairston on live from the stadium, his press conference, which is scheduled right now anyway for around 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening. Another great day ahead. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here with Sammy P next on WGR.
The Bills were actually my first formal meeting at the Combine, and I think it went great. And then I had a top 30 visit with them, and man, I was blown away. Like, I enjoyed every second of that. Every coach, my position coach, the DC, the head coach, the GM, like, man, I got along with everybody, and it just felt like home. And I'm so excited that really made it happen.
There he is, Max Hairston, out of West Bloomfield, Michigan, and the University of Kentucky. Ninth player from Kentucky the Bills have ever drafted. Stevie Johnson is a famous one. Ray Davis last year. Johnson is the most recent after that. Also, Rod Stewart.
What?
Rod the Bod was a Bills draft pick in 1979.
Wow.
A sixth round running back named Rod Stewart.
Rod the Bod.
Rod the Bod, right? That's the name, isn't it?
Rod the Mod.
Is that Rod the Bod?
No.
My whole life I thought it was Rod the Bod.
Rock singer Rod Stewart.
Yes.
Of Faces and Other Fame.
Yes. Yeah,
Rod the Mod.
Really?
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Mods. Mods is like a musical, and like it's subculture within, like, there's you know, your punks and your mods and your bikers and your greasers and mods.
I thought I was kind of showing off for you that I knew a rock star's nickname.
Mod,
I've been wrong.
You would like mods. Very well dressed.
Okay.
That was their thing. No, very neat, like suits and like very, very nice clothes.
That's a nice compliment.
Yeah.
Some great clothes last night, I thought.
Oh, man.
The Genty shoes, the diamond-studded Crocs were a great, on a tuxedo.
I thought when he walked out, he was wearing different shoes. I saw a picture of him coming in, and I saw those Crocs before the draft, but I felt like he was wearing something different.
Maybe
when
he was
out there.
Red carpet is what I'm thinking of. That's the picture I'm thinking of.
Right.
With us now, the host of Bet Sweats, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider Sam Panayotovich. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. Check out the latest lines today on the BetMGM app, and be sure to catch Bet Sweats live 9 to noon weekdays on the newly rebranded BetMGM network on the Odyssey app. Sam, I believe, is poolside as we welcome him to the show today.
It's some sort of slushy frozen drink.
Are you at least going to move away from people for this, or are you just going to be like right out there?
I moved to the back. I'm a little close to the waterfall, but I wanted that for the ambience.
We appreciate that.
The slushy stuff is rookie ball, though. We don't get to the majors until later tonight.
All right. What's in that cup? Some raspberry vodka thing?
I can tell you exactly what it is. It is a strawberry daiquiri with a Bacardi float.
Oh, who doesn't love a Bacardi float?
You got to get the Bacardi float.
Absolutely. Sam, you're living well. I enjoyed your show today with Joe. How did last night go for you?
I only made 4 bets. My 2 biggest are the ones we talked about last week. Loveland under 19.5. I had Williams from Georgia under 15.5. Those guys went 10 and 11. So those both hit. Those were my biggest bets. And then I lost Golden to be the first receiver not named Travis Hunter. I liked the bet. I thought it was the right size, wrong shape. McMillan going eighth, that's going to ruin any bet like that. But, you know, Golden was plus 170. I thought he slid a little bit deeper than I thought. He's going to be a really good player, though, for Green Bay. And Matt LaFleur was on the McAfee show today kind of breaking down how they're going to use him. And I went, ooh, maybe I like the Packers a little bit to hear LaFleur get so excited about using that speed, because that's the one thing about the Packers. They have a lot of decent possession receivers. They don't really have that burner, and that's SEC burn right there with Matthew Golden. So if he can take the top off deep, all of a sudden it becomes easier to throw the ball. And then obviously, as you guys know, if you can throw the ball, you can run the ball easier. I thought that was a really nice pickup by them in Green Bay. Who had a better night than him in terms of, like, getting his ego going? He's rumbling through the crowd outside the stadium.
Right.
You know, dressed like a damn pimp. I thought he was having the time of his life last night.
He looked angry though when he was drafted. At first, they came through that hall. I thought Golden. They came through that hallway, and a bunch of guys were just dancing around and tapping their new team's logo and everything. Golden did nothing. He had a scowl on his face. Didn't touch the logo. Just, you know, seemed miserable by the result, but. If I'm right, he certainly did seem to warm up to the idea in very little time.
He was saving it up till he got out on the stage, that's all.
Maybe it was all an act, I don't know. You didn't have any QB2 action, Sam?
No, we had thought about doing Dart to go before Shador. I didn't know what to do with Sanders, and I think we talked about this last week. I've never seen a player in terms of a draft stock with the betting market. The first number on Sanders was 3.5. And I think I remember this. I was in Chicago. It was a late Friday in March. And I said, I don't know how he goes 1, 2, or 3. And then that number got to 6.5 and 8.5 and 9.5. And one of the books had 21.5 night of the draft. And I didn't know what to do. And usually those moves are true. You know, we saw it the other way with a guy like Kelvin Banks, who was 23.5 and went down to 13.5. He goes number 9 overall. A guy like Williams goes from 15.5 to 11.5, goes 11. Tyler Booker went from 28.5 to 16.5. He goes 12. Usually the moves are true and all the numbers hit. I just don't remember ever seeing a guy open at 3.5 over under, close at 21.5, and fall out of the first round. It's something I've never seen before since we've been able to bet the draft across the country for the last, you know, 7 years or so. Mm-hmm. I also remember the three of us talking about him going into these interviews with sunglasses and chains on and people being like, what is his deal? And I don't know that his awareness is all that high as a human being right now. That doesn't mean that he can't be a good player in this league, but I think he was certainly humbled last night. He had every single NFL team hat in his draft room that he had built for Thursday night and that $100,000 gold chain on, and he doesn't get picked. If that doesn't wake him up, nothing will.
Well, I wonder, you've mentioned this before with us, like that his style might be throwing teams off. And I don't know, man. I got to say, I think if a team is thrown off by a guy being stylish and outgoing in that way, I think they're doing it wrong in 2025. I mean, I think he could wear a diamond-crusted tiara and a miniskirt to the draft. If he could play, he would have gotten picked. I just don't think he can play well enough. He can play. He's going to play in the league. But to be a first-round pick, I just never trusted the talent. You know, I mean, there's a lot of hype. And, you know, the fashion, I guess, is a part of that. But man, if I'm a team and my GM or my scouts are like, yeah, I don't like his necklace, I'd be like, you're fired. You know, can he play? That's what I care about. And I just don't think the tape tells you, you know, the arm isn't great. The athleticism isn't great.
It's size.
Like, I mean, there's nothing really elite there other than, you know, name recognition. And that's only going to get you so far.
I heard an interesting comment this morning. Somebody said, what if his dad was Barry and not Dion? Would it be different? I don't know that answer. I think it's a very fascinating debate. If his dad was a lot calmer and a little bit more private, maybe it worked in his favor. I don't know. I don't think it's about the necklace. Let me be clear. I don't think it's about the shades and the glasses. I think it's about the general arrogance, not confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're a great player, to your point, Bulldog, if you're a great player, teams will look away from that. If you're questionably good, I think it hinders you, if that makes any mm-hmm. sense. Like,
yep.
It helps you if you're great. It doesn't help you if you're not great. And time will tell. Look, Mel Kiper was banging on the table last night saying that he was the best quarterback and the fifth best prospect. And I'm not saying Mel's wrong. I mean, 32 teams disagreed with him in the first round. But, you know, guys have slid in the past. Aaron Rodgers comes to mind, a guy who slid and was embarrassed night of the draft, and he's a Hall of Famer. So if it's channeled the right way and this gets his attention, it could actually be a boon in his direction. I think he's a fine player. Now he has to put the work in. He has to study the tape, and he has to not make music videos. Now he has to worry about being a professional quarterback. That is a big challenge for a lot of people.
I'll say I have no doubt that every organization has people in their football department that think this way. that would be offended almost to that level. Mm-hmm. They would be offended by it. And they might keep that mostly private because they are probably aware of how the world has changed. But I think it's real. You know, Caleb Williams was different, not in this same way, you know, painting his nails and the people having the, I'm thinking of Merrill Hodge, like people who had questions mm-hmm. about what, his dedication or maybe similar things. And, you know, for him, he was amazing on the field.
Right.
Less so as in his last year, but previously, and he went 101. So I think that's to Sam's last point there, that if you're so good, we don't mind so much.
The Kuiper thing was kind of weird, I thought, Sam. Like, I don't know if you I watched ESPN all night. It's almost out of habit. And the way the draft started, like, the Titans are on the clock, and I'm getting Shedeur Sanders highlights. Like, they just went so hard for, like, the first 4 or 5 minutes of their actual draft coverage once the clock was ticking. And I just thought it was so misplaced and weird. You got to, you know, recognize the other guy is going number one. Everyone knows it. And I'm watching Sanders highlights and Mel, you know, I understand him getting loose later on and defending, you know, his opinion. I mean, he's been doing this a long time and, you know, fine. But right at the top of the draft, I thought it was really misplaced that they gave him that platform to talk about a guy that, I don't know. I wasn't expecting him to go in round one. I certainly didn't know that.
But the line was 21 and a half.
But it was just so weird that they spent that amount of time on him to start the whole thing was, I thought, misplaced.
So I was switching back and forth. I was on a plane. I was going back and forth between the Tampa Bay Lightning whiffing on another power play to the draft coverage. But every time I switched over, I thought, that's weird. They haven't talked about Shedeur yet. And everybody else was getting talked about, and they were breaking down Corso and how great Lee has been. And they talked about every topic under the sun. And then, to your point, Tennessee Titans are on the clock. Roll the Sanders footage. You're like, wait. That's the strangest idea. But I guess that was the best time for it, they thought. I don't know. I would have paid more attention to Cam Ward going into the pick. And then, of course, everything goes sideways when – Cleveland and Jacksonville make the trade. Then everybody went into a panic, and it's like, what do we do now? So I think the draft, you know, it was funny. Everybody said the draft starts at 5. Well, actually, the draft started at 2 when that huge trade happened, and then you went from there. So I was looking at some numbers right now. A couple books have odds up on Rookie of the Year, which I think is an interesting conversation. I'm not making any bets right now, but the favorite right now to be Rookie of the Year on the offensive side, you have a co-favorite, Cam Ward and Ashton Jeffrey are 2-1. Hunter is 750. McMillan is 10-1. Amari and Hampton is 12, and Matthew Golden is 18. You could probably draw the line there. I don't know that I would bet Tyler Warren, Sanders, Abuka, or maybe Josh Allen, Jackson Dart. But I think Cameron Ward and Ashton Jeffrey are going to be the guys that get a lot of the headlines going into training camp, excuse me. And I don't know that Travis Hunter is going to play enough reps on offense to win that award. On the D side, it's Abdul Carter. He's +2.25, very obvious favorite there, followed by Jalen Walker and Travis Hunter again.
Yep.
But I think, you know, we start to see more and more markets as we get into the month of May, and then we're going to be full steam ahead once we get to June.
Sam, as we wrap here, I did hear you say this morning that you were not going to do any draft stuff tonight. You were staying away from it. So I recognizing that, did kind of want to get your take on anything you might have in mind about it. What Sanders, where he ends up going, or Milroe, anything about round two at all?
There was a market this morning. The Browns were -350 to get Shedeur. I don't love that. Now that's come down a little bit. So now he's favored to go to Las Vegas at -150. That feels like a decent fit there. I don't know how much longer Geno is going to be an active quarterback in this league. So currently the market, Raiders -150, Browns 2-1, Saints 450. I'm still holding out maybe the Rams at 12-1.
Yep.
That might not be a bad place to sit him behind Matthew Stafford and let him develop. I don't know, Mike. I'm not going to lie. I haven't studied much of this today. I did bet the Timberwolves money line.
Yes.
And I also, you know, Sneaky Joe and I text like every day now about the Rockies. Did you guys look by chance? I'm guessing the answer is no. Have you seen the Rockies schedule in the month of May?
I heard Joe rattle it off today. I was listening carefully, so I know about it through May.
I know they're in San Francisco next weekend because I'm going to Denver, and I looked to see if they would be at home, and I saw that they were going to be in San Francisco. I was like, darn it! I don't get to go to a Rockies game while I'm in Denver.
Sam said today that they might not win 40 games.
So here's the schedule. So after they play Cincinnati and Atlanta to wrap up April, you know, three against a very hot Braves team now. Here's May at San Francisco, Detroit and San Diego come to Denver. Then you're at Texas, at Arizona, then a seven-game homestand against the Phillies and the Yankees. Then you're at the Cubs, then you're at the Mets. I don't know how many games they're going to win. They might win four games next month.
Well, sounds like you're sitting pretty on that one. enjoy a sunny weekend, and we'll talk next Friday.
All right, guys. Always fun. See you.
Thank you. Sam Paniadovich, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider. Insider calls presented by BetMGM. For all your betting needs, check out the newly rebranded BetMGM network on the Odyssey app. Defensive tackle being the Browns' first choice would have paid pretty well. I don't know how much that would have paid, but nobody was on that. All right, we'll talk to Sal at 4, have a few minutes before that, 803-0550. Max Hairston, scheduled to speak down at the stadium at around 5. We hope to be able to carry that for you then. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR. Welcome back. Night 2 of the NFL Draft starts at 7. Last night was at 8. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, Sal Capaccio in 10 minutes. From Nolan Bianchi. New Lions defensive tackle Tyleek Williams has said the Bills told him they would have taken him at 30.
That was Sal's guy.
That was Sal's pick in his mock draft.
All right.
I wonder if the Bills will be asked about that.
Probably.
Because they're not going to want to just say, yeah, that's right. You know, it's not great for them. I mean, they didn't have the chance. Just you wouldn't want to do that with Hairston, right?
Right.
You want Hairston to think he was their first choice. I mean, it's not quite that way. I mean, there's lots of guys that would have, you know, been picked way earlier. But still, you know, just sort of.
I wonder how many guys they tell that to. Because we you know, and guys can also interpret, you know, different, and there's different people that talk to the players, too. The Bills can be pretty vague. That could be a position coach, you know. Who knows who tells you that, you know? doesn't matter. But I think, you know, yeah, you wouldn't want Hairston to feel like he was, something, you know, a leftover.
They got sniped, yeah. So they picked him.
But I think, you know, lots, like Xavier Worthy is what I was going to get to. Last year, like eventually as the season wore on, and I think once they beat the Bills in the playoffs, kind of came out that he felt like, I think it was from Joe Brady, that he felt like they really like me and they're going to pick me. But, you know, guys can kind of miss that, or teams can, I don't know how much they would want to mislead guys, but different people in the building might have different favorites, and you know, who knows.
By the way, also, and like we'll break and bring Sal on, Adam Schefter was just on talking about Shedeur Sanders, and bottom line, he said, I think we're at a point now where unless he goes in the third round to Pittsburgh, somebody we're not talking about at all will draft him. He's talking about Sanders not being picked in the second round either.
Wow.
He said the Giants preferred Dart, which is obvious because they drafted him.
Traded up to get him.
So did Cleveland. So did New Orleans. Schefter, I won't be surprised if Tyler Shugg goes ahead of Sanders tonight. Sal next. Thanks for listening today. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.